Samuel cuts it back. Ohio State wins.
Flashes, champions of the Mid-American Conference.
Throw to Baker Mayfield to tie the game. Marion grabbed by Linder. Throw to first. Unbelievable.
Chubb will take this all the way. 92 yards. And the Ohio State Buckeyes are the first national champions of the playoff era.
The Indians have won the American League pennant.
It's over. It's over. Cleveland is a city of champions once again. The Cavaliers are NBA champions.
I accepted it. Gladiator, gladiator, gladiator. Meant to fight with the gods. I'm the giant slayer. Bone shaker, dominator. Freight train wrecking ball. I'm the gladiator.
And welcome to an episode of Pass the Mic Sports Talk. I'm your host, Enzo Orlando, and along with me today is our guest co-host, Hunter Aletta. How you doing today, Hunter?
Doing good, Enzo. How's it going today?
Going good. Great day out. Beautiful weather out here in Northeast Ohio, but been about two weeks since we've done an episode, but we got to get into some big news happening over in the Cleveland sports. As the Cleveland Browns finally traded Baker Mayfield to the Carolina Panthers for a potential fourth round pick. So the Baker Mayfield era in Cleveland is over. Moving on to the more focus on the Deshaun Watson, even though we're not going to find out about his suspension until I'm hearing rumors about next week.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's kind of one of those things where it's like, we're so glad that it's over, but we have to remember that Baker did provide some success. He did provide success to the city. I mean, you know, that Thursday night against the Jets after, you know, 1-31, and then the following year was great, and then the 2020 year was just a great season he had. He had a game-winning drive against the Bengals. I mean, it was just a magical year, a win in Pittsburgh for a playoff, and you know, it's unfortunate, but I would not consider him a bust. And, you know, I've talked to some people and they say, oh, this is comparable to when the Browns screwed over Bernie Kosar. No, it's not. I think Bernie is obviously a better quarterback than Baker. I mean, I wasn't around for Bernie's time, but I've seen highlights and from what I've, you know, again, seen in highlights and you compare. But it just didn't work out for Baker. And I think potentially his downfall was just and I know we have a lot of Baker supporters out here on the show and throughout the city. Baker's worst enemy was his ability not to take things so personal when it came to the media and himself. He's a good player, but again, it's just he just couldn't. He always had to have the first and last word to every situation. That was, I think, was his downfall.
Yeah, it was. I mean, just the whole of last season with the injury and thing of him just really telling the doctors, like, look, I'm playing, I know myself, and Stefanski and Andrew Perry just going with that really hurted him a lot in his Browns career. We all thought 2019 was the year we were going to make it all the way. We thought we were going to get back and face off the team in the playoffs. It didn't happen. It was very unfortunate. We saw a couple games of Baker, and especially that Lions was banged up. In that game, but there he was, so interceptions against the worst team in the league. So that goes shows, but all I gotta say is the Baker Mayfield era is probably the best era for our generation of Browns fans. We've never seen the Browns successful in our lives. They were so bad for so long, we saw them at the lowest point going 0-16. And then Baker bounced back, winning that game against the Jets, so leading us to the playoffs, and the Steelers to the playoffs. He was the first Browns quarterback to ever give us hope, really. I mean, that Derek Anderson season, that was kind of a fluke. He underperformed in 2000.
Yeah, the Derek Anderson, that I remember watching that season. You know, after that season, the first game we played Dallas, I remember going to that game with my uncle, and I remember we played, it was like, oh, yeah, you know, this is a team that can make it. And it just, it flopped. And it just was kind of like a one season, you know, it was like what you call a one hit wonder in the music industry. I mean, it's just, It's going to be hard to see Baker in a Carolina uniform, but when you look at it,
it's a good situation for him because you look at the receivers around him, and yes, they signed Rashard Higgins, so he's familiar with. You've got Christian McCaffrey. You've got DJ Moore, Robbie Anderson. I mean, they have some weapons down there. But again, it's just we just have to wait and see what happens. And what's funny is you go to a situation where you have a quarterback in Sam Darnold who was picked, I think, what, two or three picks behind you in that same draft. And then your head coach is a guy that you basically taunted and cussed out when you were at Oklahoma when he was at Baylor, telling him he has to go home and go and come to daddy. So that's going to be an interesting dynamic. But, I mean, we'll see what happens. And I'll tell you what, that first week one, it's going to be one of the hottest tickets in town and, you know, for the city of Charlotte, and also two high TV ratings. And I wouldn't be surprised if a few unsportsmanlike conduct penalties come out in that game.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I bet a lot of it would be on Baker because we all know him as just having that big mouth of his, like, never stopping with, like, players, media, et cetera. And you're probably going to see a lot of that opening game against the Panthers. But all I got to say is he's clearly the starting quarterback for the Panthers. I mean, Sam Darnold, he's no good. He's the second worst quarterback in that draft class. Cam Newton is done to watch, and I don't think the Panthers could ever resign him. They kind of did that. Tickets.
Don't forget PJ Walker, XFL superstar for only four games.
Yeah.
Well, who's 2-0 as a starter for the Panthers.
Yeah, didn't do well after that. Realized that the NFL is so much different than the NFL. But all I got to say is that I think Browns fans are really going to miss Baker, and this is either going to be, we'll regret getting him on Watson trade, or we'll have a lot of the Gwets wait to Baker. I mean, I really never said a lot of bad things about Baker other than last season. I was more critical on his playing and his injury, and I did a lot of rant on that, if you remember.
Oh, yes. And, you know, it was a situation where the writing was on the wall where, you know, I wouldn't say that Andrew Berry and Kevin Stefanski were trying to hang him out to dry by playing him and listening to him. But you could tell if he was the quarterback for the Browns for the long haul, there was no way he was playing past that Houston game. No way. There's no way. And, you know, it just – I understand that Baker, as most analysts and media personnel will say, leads the league in moxie. That's not going to win you games. That's going to give you style points per se, but you have to be able to humble yourself because you'll rub a lot of people the wrong way. So, but now in the Deshaun Watson thing is what's interesting is now this trade came after a good portion of the hearings that Deshaun Watson had. That's what's the interesting part of this trade.
Yeah, that is. We're still waiting on the suspension and everything. But I'm kind of like, we're kind of just now waiting on that. And all I got to say is week one, be ready to have Jacoby resetting. I have a feeling it's not going to really be Sean.
I think it will be.
I've heard rumors of 8-10 games.
But here's the thing. When you look at it, end zone, I wouldn't be shocked if it was 6 to maybe 10 games or so. But when you think about it, the reports came out from all ESPN, NFL Network, and CBS. They came out and said that the league found, and the hearings found, no violence or malicious or anything nefarious acts towards Deshaun Watson. That is very key. Now, first off, I want to preface, and I understand that, yes, there are people that are sexually assaulted. There are people, women, and especially women that are sexually assaulted. I am very sympathetic of that, 100%.
But what the league does not want is that they give him the full season suspension or maybe a 10-game suspension. They go back to a federal court to get this appealed. What's going to happen then is then the federal court's going to go, okay, where are the criminal charges? No, all right, he wins the appeal. That's what the league doesn't want because then it's just going to go back and forth. I think that they're probably I wouldn't be shocked if there's a suspension, but I also would not be shocked if there was no suspension just because given the fact that that week one game is, you know, Deshaun Watson, the new Browns quarterback, versus Baker Mayfield, the former Browns quarterback. And in the NFL, you know, it wants their money. They're going to squeeze. They want as many eyes on that. They want as many eyes on that television screen to see the NFL shield. It's just too good for business to pass up on. And you see what the league has done with giving guys like, you know, Ray Rice and Greg Hardy. I mean, you know, they're all – the NFL is all about the money right now. And it's just too good for television to pass up on Deshaun Watson versus Baker Mayfield.
I can see your point. Yeah, I know the NFL is all about business and making money. That's why they're the most successful sports league in America. But I just think the past times the NFL's done those suspensions when it comes to sexual assault or violence against women, it was Ray Rice with that short game suspension, and then they just kind of, you know, banned them.
Well, if you remember, Ray Rice on camera was caught on camera literally Mike Tysoning a woman, which is completely uncalled for, and some way, somehow, there were no criminal charges filed. I mean, that's – but then again, we're not lawyers. We didn't go to law school for that one. But, again, unfortunately, I think with the Deshaun Watson situation, we're in an unfortunate situation where it is a huge he said, she said kind of a thing. And the only people that know the truth are the people that were actually in the room, and they're mitigating in the hearing. So – we just have to wait and see what happens.
Yes, but I am still seeing I still don't see him starting week one. I still, because I think the NFL is trying to avoid going on those short games since we did that with Ezekiel Elliott too, and that, you know, the internal good with the way things are with our whole culture. But so, yeah, I think 6 to 10 games, 8 at the best. That's what I think. And going back to Baker, a lot of Browns fans and thank Baker for what he's done in this league and bringing the Browns back to relevancy, but you didn't see anything from his players. Are you a bit shocked by that?
No. Nothing. It just goes to show that, you know, when someone does a lot for the city, and, you know, when people – like players that are really impactful to a city and to an organization, you'll see support from – you know, you're hoping to – you know, you're expected to see support for teammates. But the fact that nothing came out of the Browns – and what's interesting is that when the Cleveland Browns social media posted the thanking Baker Mayfield, there's only 3 people that said something.
Jimmy and D Haslam, 1 and 2, and Andrew Berry. There was nothing from Kevin Stefanski. There was nothing from the players. It said it all right there that Baker Mayfield was not liked in that locker room.
Yeah, and I read something from Jason Lloyd from The Athletic earlier today to talk about just, you know, Baker's behavior was immature, childish. You know, I've heard rumors of him being spotted out at areas in Cleveland late at night with, you know, a couple other players and things. But I think that probably bugged a lot of the players and really questioning his leadership as a quarterback.
Which, yeah, and now someone said to me, is this like Johnny Manziel? No. Absolutely not. Johnny Manziel is a different breed of horse right there. It's just, first off, Baker Mayfield is not the mature Johnny Manziel. Baker Mayfield is his own different breed of racehorse right here. But it just, Baker, I think, had a good foundation around him. It's like, and I compare this to the movie Major League with Charlie Sheen and Wesley Snipes, you know. Rick Vaughn came out of nowhere, the bad boy, and then all of a sudden he, you know, really got the stardom, and then all of a sudden he let it get to his head, the commercials, the you know, the hot wife and everything, and then went down the drain. But then he remembered who he was and just went out and played ball, and you saw that he, you know, in the second movie got into the World Series in the movie. Baker Mayfield, I would compare that to Major League, but he just – never humbled himself, and I think Carolina is a good little refresher for him. I mean, plus two, you know, I remember when I called on your guys' show when you were on Black School Radio about the Odell video, people were painting Odell as the bad guy. Maybe Odell wasn't wrong.
No, maybe he wasn't. I mean, I think with Baker and Odell, they had a good friendship, but not a good, you know, like work relationship. This is the best way I can put it.
Oh, absolutely, for sure. And, you know, but when you think about it, and then even too, then Kareem Hunt's father came out and said something. It's like, okay, I mean, you know, it's more of just like, all right. It was just a very particular situation where I think Baker's abrasive personality really rubbed people the wrong way. So, and like, you know, like we keep saying, I think his this new looking Carolina, I think will, you know, be a good change for him. So, but I just, he needs to be somewhere where he can, you know, flex his muscle and be abrasive. And I think the brass in Cleveland is not taking that approach. And Carolina is going to take anything, because when you think about it, no one really goes to Carolina unless you go to the University of North Carolina, Duke, NC State, or you're going down to, for the warm months of the year. So really nobody goes to Charlotte. So they need to really bring something to the city of Charlotte.
Yeah, for football, for sure. And just want to wish Baker Mayfield the best of luck in his career. And we'll see him week one against the Panthers. But sticking with football, we're heading to the world of college football. We're about a month away till the season starts. But the big news happening is USC and UCLA moving to Big Ten in 2024. So these so-called super conferences of Big Ten and SEC might be happening. And Hunter, I'll give you my take, and mine will be an interesting one.
So I am a traditionalist when it comes to college sports. You know, you stick to your regions, you stick to where you're at, and you have your regions based on the market. But, you know, here's the thing. I would have seen Notre Dame joining the Big Ten way before USC and UCLA. USC, UCLA, I may have given them a 1% chance just because of the region, and you have to think about it too. You know, they're going to go to a divisional play. They're going to be the Big Ten West. So, and then you'll probably have to move over Purdue and maybe an Illinois or something to the Big Ten East. But think about it. USC would have to fly all the way to, you know, their farthest trip would be to Rutgers, Patterson, New Jersey. That's a far flight. And you're going through
the equipment drivers and stuff. That's,
yeah. Oh, no, they have to fly those too. That's not driving. They're flying that. That's like you're going through what? Pacific, Mountain, Central. You're going through 3 to 4 different time zones. You have to leave in the middle of the week just to get adjusted. So, you know, that could be upset Central. But I see why now USC makes sense and UCLA, because when Fox Sports Big Noon came out, the Big Noon kickoff show came out, they tried to bring that out to rival ESPN College Game Day. Most of the people on there were from USC. Matt Leinart, Reggie Bush, their studios are in Los Angeles. They're on Fox. Fox owns the Big Ten Network. I see the connection. Plus two, you know, it's the LA market, because now we have the LA market. You have the East Coast market with Washington, D.C. and University of Maryland. And now you have Rutgers, which is the state school of New Jersey, but it's pretty close to New York, the New York market. It really makes sense to why they brought them there. Now, on a football side, you see what USC is doing in the transfer market. They're bringing everybody from every school. And if USC wins a couple national championships or maybe a couple playoff appearances the next few years before they come to the Big Ten, this move is going to look so good for the Big Ten, you know, and could potentially trump Oklahoma, Texas going to the SEC. And now UCLA – you know, that's another LA school, you know, plus recently UCLA has made a small resurgence in the basketball realm. And the Big Ten is obviously the best conference in basketball right now. So that's why I think they made that move as well. So I'm intrigued to see what happens. Enzo, what do you think?
So here's my thing. You know, me, alumni of Kent State University, had the honor and privilege to work on the football team. But when it comes to these super conferences coming in, they're really going to screw over a lot of these Group of Five conference, you know, for example, the MAC, Conference USA, just name a few. And those schools, when they play A&M, Ohio State, Alabama, Oklahoma, Georgia, you know, any of the Big Ten, SEC, Pac-12 schools, they get a lot of money from these schools. And I'm looking at Ohio State's future schedule going up to 2027 is the 2028, actually, is the last time they have to face a Group of Five school, and that is the MAC with Buffalo. After 2028, going into 2029, there aren't any of those. So think about it. In about the next 8 years or so, those schools are like have a couple last chance to make a couple million from them playing the big power system. And then
you just brought that up, Enzo. If you know off the top of your head, how much money did Kent State get from Texas A&M this past year, if you're allowed to disclose that?
I'm not allowed to disclose it, but all I know is they get a pretty good couple million from them.
And it helps them with the athletic facilities.
It helps them with the athletic department, funding the programs, funding all the athletic facilities and everything. It gives the people for the athletic program a good amount of money because the schools – they don't really give like a lot to the athletics compared to like a school like Ohio State who gives millions to their athletic programs.
So could you see the MAC going down to like the FCS level in like the FCS playoffs?
They could possibly, but I just think the way things now, I think a lot of these MAC teams want to compete with the Power Five. And we've seen some of the upsets with like MAC teams beating Power Five, like Pitt beat. Western Michigan beat Pitt and Northern Illinois beat Georgia Tech this past season. So they're showing that they can still compete, and they put up a good fight against the top Power Five schools. But this is all way in the future. This is just something that really no one's really brought up when it came to this whole college football with the bigger schools in the Power Five.
Yeah, I understand why it's a business move. And the Big Ten is trying to rival the SEC with Texas because Texas and Oklahoma left the Big 12. But when you think about it, I mean, the Pac-12, you have a decent – I mean, the only thing that was really anchoring down the Pac-12 was USC and UCLA in the L.A. market. I mean, the only reason why athletes, football players even go to the University of Oregon is because of the fact that they have the cool jerseys and the Nike complex. There's nothing going on in Eugene, Oregon. Nothing. Then you have Arizona State, which is one of the top party schools in the country, and you're near Phoenix. University of Arizona and Tucson's literally in the middle of the desert. Nothing's going down. University of Colorado, we all know why people go to Boulder. I mean, let's be real on that one. University of Utah, not much going on there. And then the Washington schools, again, there isn't much of a recruiting draw. The only recruiting draw you got is USC, UCLA, and Oregon. And who's really going to also go to Corvallis? I mean, if we have our listeners, our alumni there, you know, God bless, I'm proud you went to those schools. But again, we're talking about a draw, you know. So the Big Ten picking up USC and UCLA is a big move. Now people are saying, oh, Oregon and Washington are going to come to the Big Ten. No, they're not. They're not going to come to the Big Ten. I see them more or less going to the Big 12 because the Big 12, yes, they picked up Cincinnati, Central Florida, Houston, and the Mormons at BYU. But other than that, what's their draw? The Big 12 needs a draw to help them get back into playoff relevancy now that they lost Texas and Oklahoma. So I could see Oregon and Washington most likely joining the Big 12 as opposed to the Big 10.
Yeah,
Notre Dame's going to stay independent because that contract they have with NBC, that's probably one of the richest, like more than I think what Texas. No, Texas has their own network, but Notre Dame, what they got going on right now with NBC, I don't see them joining a conference.
I mean, I can see Notre Dame, give it like 5 years, then Notre Dame will have to join a conference because I think all the independent schools are all going to join conferences. And I believe there might only be three conferences in the Power Five: college football, the Big Ten, SEC, and the Big 12. The Pac-12 could dissolve. The ACC could dissolve too. I mean, it's a good conference for basketball, but really not much really going on unless you're Clemson or Pitt.
Right. And then, two, when you look at the ACC, I mean, when you think about it, like, you know, I graduated high school in 2012, 10 years ago this time. when you looked at the ACC, the top schools in the ACC, you know, Clemson was on the rise. Florida State was the premier school. Miami was mediocre, but they would get athletes going to the University of Miami. I mean, you know, like I said, Florida State, University of Miami. Clemson was kind of on that rise. Virginia Tech was good at football. I mean, when you look at, like former really, like, prestigious football, you know, like, brands in the ACC, you got Clemson, Florida State, the University of Miami, Va-Tech.
But again, you know, you're hoping that, you know, but again, the only thing that's really keeping that conference in relevancy really is, you know, hoping that Clemson does well and Florida State gets back to where they're supposed to be as a program when they were under the Jimbo Fisher and Bobby Bowden eras in Tallahassee. So the ACC is really hurting. And the only thing, I guess, you know, I should revert. The only thing that's really carrying them as a name is their basketball. Like you just said, North Carolina, Duke, NC State, Louisville, Syracuse. I mean, I don't know if it was the Big Ten or the ACC had the most qualifiers in March Madness. So the ACC, I think, is going to dissolve too, because Clemson and Carolina are going to probably join the SEC.
Yeah, more than likely. And just the Pac-12 itself, it's been an irrelevant conference in college football for like the past like 10 years. Like, it's been like forever since USC was in the national championship game. It was 2005 against Vince Young
in Texas. Right. In the playoff era, 8 years ago, the college football playoff began. Since then, the first three years,
the Pac-12 had a representative. Oregon, the first year, and then the third year, they had University of Washington. Okay? After that, there has not been a Pac-12 team. And it just goes to show you that, you know, unfortunately, due to their region and their games are on at midnight and 10 o'clock at night, it's a lot harder for people to watch and the committee to view them. But the Pac-12 is, again, you still have the LA market. You still have that right there where you can really, you know, and all the football. I mean, it's warm weather year round pretty much all over there. So you have good football out there. But it's just, I think that conference was just poorly mismanaged.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. And so enough of the football talk. For now, we got Guardians baseball to talk about. And oh man, the month of July. Coming off beating the Twins in their series in the ending off June. And then you were at this series last weekend against the Yankees, losing that doubleheader. And then we get swept by Detroit and lose to the Royals last night. What has happened to this team? I mean, Jose Ramirez is going down in the All-Star voting because of this, too.
Yeah, I mean, the Guardians, you know, they had a good stretch at the end of June going into July. You know, but I think, first off, it's the Yankees. They're the best right now, the best team in baseball right now. And, you know, thank goodness we had Jose Ramirez locked down long-term for a contract. Otherwise, they'd be talking about people about the Guardians trading him. But I just think that, you know, that Yankee series maybe took a little bit out of them in regards to, and I wouldn't say motivation, but just like, you know, kind of, you know, they're a little bit tired because if you think about it too, Enzo, the past few weeks, they've had to play a lot of doubleheaders. And that's, and, you know, as an athlete, that could take a lot out of you to play at 1 o'clock. Then you get done at 4 o'clock. And then you got only a 2 hour rest before you play from 6 till 9, 10 o'clock at night. That's a lot to ask. So I think, yeah, we lost the Royals last night. But when you look at the rest of the upcoming schedule, you know, I think I wouldn't say the division is winnable per se. I mean, there's a chance, but I think we could be a wild card team. I really do. I just think we just need to get all the guys rested and just going forward. And now, and maybe trading, you know, maybe go after, you know, I would say, honestly, I would trade for the catcher from the Cubs, Wilson Contreras, because you need that bat as a catcher. Because who do we have as a catcher right now? I mean, Austin Hedges,
Sandy Leon,
Luke Miley, and Sandy Leon. I mean, other than that, you really don't have a catcher. You're pretty solid in your infield. I mean, you know, hopefully, you know, I mean, I'd love Bobby Bradley to come out of the slump, whatever he's going through, because he has potential. But you have a decent core of young players. But I think when you add that bat and maybe a Wilson Contreras, he would be a great piece to help us get to at least get to the playoffs. Do I think we're a World Series contender? Absolutely not. We aren't. But I think we are definitely on the road to maybe being a bubble team for this upcoming rest of the season.
Yeah, that is possible. They're just gas, like you mentioned, all the doubleheaders and things. I mean, the All-Star break usually starts, like, next week, but no, it's not until another week out, 18th and 19th. So they got another home series against Chicago, which includes the doubleheader. And then you got the Tigers, and I just hope we don't get swept by them. I mean, that was the first time we got swept by the Detroit Tigers since 2015 in a four-game
series. That was rough to see, but I think, again, it's just, you know, our team is just out of gas right now, and they are just now they're somewhat playing on fumes because they're playing, you know, doubleheader, and then they got to go on the road to Detroit, and then we go on the road to Chicago, and then we come back to play Detroit. That's a lot to ask. I mean, you know, it's a lot. And, you know, some of the old people go, oh, shut up and play baseball. You know, it's baseball. Yeah, it's baseball, but I mean, that's a lot. I mean, now, thank goodness we're not doing, like, you know, we're traveling out to L.A. and then coming back. That would be a whole, you know, that'd be a whole other monster to deal with. But I'm not too concerned because we still have enough games left in the season, Enzo. But I think we'll be okay. But it's just a lot right now.
Yeah, and I just think this goes back to the way, you know, baseball is scheduled. The 162-game schedule needs to go. There is no reason baseball should be playing in April in Cleveland, Ohio, or anywhere in the Midwest or the Northeast. The weather is terrible. It's cold. The Guardians have all these doubleheaders because of the bad weather in April and May. Literally making no sense why that we're getting cast with all these doubleheaders. This is the one they have out of the game. I know I get all these baseball traditions telling me, oh, it's got to be 160 game. That's the most out of any of the sports leagues in the top four in America. The next one most is the NBA. They play 82, not even 100. Oh, I mean, I would have been cutting it, like, for what, 142 games maybe? 100? It's way too much. You know, athletes, you know, they're getting bigger and stronger now, but they're also getting more tired, easier and things. Injuries are more prone. I mean, and plus, like, all the cities, you know, not every city has a dome, and domes don't work well in baseball like it does in football. So they really need to have the season start in, like, May or late April.
Well, I see where you're coming from with that, Enzo, but then again, here's the one thing baseball does have that really kind of sets them apart as opposed to, like, well, basketball does have this, but the NBA has this, but Major League Baseball, they have the minor league system to where they can option people and pull people up to give people a rest and all these trips and everything going on. So that's where I would kind of counter your point and say, yeah, like, keep the 162, you know. And I even like the doubleheader where it just goes to 7 innings, because when they did a doubleheader, they did the 9-inning game and then another 9-inning game. That was just too much baseball. But you go to the 7-inning game, it speeds the game up, you know, put a man on second base in extra innings, which I like. I just think that with you have those extra players you have in the minor league system, especially too if you're the Guardians, pretty much all your farm teams are in Ohio. So it's literally like at most a 2-hour drive or 2-hour whatever commute to Cleveland to play a game or whatever. That's completely doable where, you know, it's just so much doable. It's way more doable. So I would – that's my counter to that point of the 162.
All right, well, folks, it's now time to get into the best part of the show.
What are you doing, Drunky?
Drunky of the week, and I'm going to go for it. So we're talking about minor league baseball and preseason or whatever. Well, the NBA summer league's going on. I mean, not too many people really pay attention. You know, people like scouts, players, see how things perform. But this NBA summer league season, they're going to give away rings to the winner of the summer league, which honestly, it seems like it's a participation trophy. Not all the guys on the summer team make the final 12-man roster. It'll be cool for them to have one. It feels like there's no point or purpose in why you need to, like, give out more trophies for, like, not even preseason, just practice league. That's why I put summer league. I never even, like, really watch it.
Yeah, the last time I watched the Summer League was maybe when Andrew Wiggins was on the Cavaliers back in 2014 before he got traded. That was because I was like, oh, I'm excited to see what he'll do. But, yeah, I see why they're doing – I mean, I can understand it.
Do they hand out rings when you win in spring training in baseball? No.
No, and like when the Browns – what's funny is the Browns went undefeated in the preseason and then lost every game in the regular season. The only thing they got was homage making a T-shirt saying they're the preseason champions. Like, that doesn't make any sense, but I understand it's a confidence booster. That's why they changed it from the D League to the G League, so that way it doesn't sound too horrible.
That's all. That's all.
Yeah.
Literally just put it
right. Well, plus, too, I mean, if you think about it, hey, we're sending you down back to the D League. That does sound kind of a little demoralizing. Just to kind of go, oh, really, the D League. And, yeah, there's a cash grab for Gatorade. But that's a good drunkie of the week. But, hey, I mean, what stinks, too, is a lot of these, you know, my father's a jeweler. And, you know, he's seen a lot of championship rings. And he knows some guys in the pawn business that take championship rings. No pawn shop is going to take a Summer League championship ring. Some guys got to pay their bills. Oh, what's this? Oh, this is my NBA Summer League ring. Like, who's really going to want that?
You got to be like a crazy NBA not to.
Ring. I don't think the craziest NBA fan would want that ring. They're going to look at. I mean, I saw the ring. It literally looks like one of those knockoff rings you buy off a knockoff website, like a knockoff championship ring. It's what it literally looks like. I get why they're doing it for morale, but it is just that's unneeded.
Yeah.
What are you doing, drunkie?
My drunkie of the week, I would have to say, and some people would say this, we're going to stick with the NBA, is the Brooklyn Nets. I mean, what the Brooklyn Nets, I mean, we think about it, I think it was 3 years ago when they got Durant and Kyrie, I think it was.
Yeah, 2019 offseason. Durant has Achilles injuries. Kyrie was normal.
And then they also got DeAndre Jordan and everything, you know. And then obviously they went out and get James Harden. If you look at that, I mean – you know, you talk about the branding in Brooklyn. I mean, Kyrie Irving, when he's on the court – actually, let me rephrase that. When he's actually on the court and he's there, not just the lights are on, nobody's home, but people are home, he is one of the best basketball players in the league. He is. And he's very talented, very gifted. We've seen it firsthand in Cleveland. His shot – excuse me – won us a championship. But I think – I think Kyrie Irving is the single most reason why the Brooklyn Nets fell hard from the stars, you know, causing James Harden to leave, you know, wanting Durant to just say, you know what, I want out of here at this point. And you can definitely blame it on Kyrie Irving because now people are saying, oh, swap Westbrook for Irving and, you know, ship Durant to Phoenix or Miami. I mean, the Brooklyn Nets, you know, I understand why they did it, but it's just like, again, if anything, when the trade deadline came around, they should have traded Kyrie Irving instead of James Harden. Because actually, I believe, or not, correct me if I'm wrong, Enzo, Harden and Durant never had a problem with each other.
No, they didn't. They used to play with each other in Oklahoma City. I mean, Kyrie was always causing the problems. Yeah.
Right. If anything, you trade Kyrie Irving to Philadelphia, where he'll play, and they didn't have the vaccine mandate, and maybe get Ben Simmons to be your point guard to go with Durant and Harden. That wouldn't be a bad thing. And then you add Kyrie Irving with a Joel Embiid, Sam Cassell was the assistant coach for the Sixers with Doc Rivers. I think the Nets really blundered with, you know, keeping Kyrie around for this long because you saw what happened. I mean, he never really played unless it was an away game. And then when they finally lifted the mandate in New York City, you saw what happened there was Kyrie was barely there. I mean,
I would call him the Antonio Brown of the NBA.
That's a very good comparison.
I mean, both of them should start a podcast.
That would be an interesting podcast, but they both have so many different like views on the way they view the world thing. It would be like so messed up.
Exactly my point. Do you want to talk about one of the richest podcasts? I mean, you got Pardon My Take, you have this, Passive Mike Sports Talk, but you think about Antonio Brown and Kyrie Irving starting their own podcast and they're both hosting?
I mean, and maybe have Trevor Bauer producing it. Think about it. That would be – and everybody, sports fans would be tuning in every week for that.
I mean, if Trevor Bauer's producing, yeah, might as well. He would kind of be like, you know, Hank and part of my take, the producer.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Antonio and Kyrie, they would seem like they would just fight a lot.
Hey, it'd be good media. Let me tell you what, their ratings would be up, and they'd get a lot of sponsors from Blue Chew and all that kind of stuff.
Oh yeah, definitely. Or just whatever Kyrie's vegan company, or I forget what his religion is. He Muslim?
I know. He's Kyrieism. Let's just leave it at that.
All right. Well, Hunter, dude, thanks for coming on to this episode. We appreciate you coming on this episode. Pass the mic. The U.S. Open, the Open is next week down at St. Andrews, Scotland. I don't think Michael and I will be able to do a podcast on that next week, but we will put in our picks and our bets for that. So anything you guys say, Hunter?
No, I mean, I would probably say right now, is Scheffler playing in the Open? Do we know?
I don't see anything on that right now.
And who's that? And who's the guy that was runner up at the last few major opens?
Zalatoris.
I could maybe, if he's playing, I could see it. Maybe this is where he cracks the lineup. I'm sorry, cracks up. Like really, really has, you know, I think he probably cracks that shell to just win the Open. And I think that would really do well for his career right now and the kind of season he's having.
Yeah, that could, but this is his like first time at the Open, like playing in Scotland and England. It's so much different than playing up in the States or even Canada, really just the environment and everything. So that's tough for a lot of players, and they haven't had the Open in, I know they had it last year, yeah. So yeah, it's just like, you know, first time out there. I mean, that was last year, but they did have it last year.
Yeah, so that'll be interesting, and you know, let's just hope that this Deshaun Watson situation gets figured out, and the Guardians get back on a good standing this upcoming series. You know, finish up the Royals and go into Chicago and then Detroit, and so we'll see what happens.
Homestand next weekend. Let's finish it off strong for the All-Star break. All right, Hunter, thanks for coming on, man. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks, Enzo. Thanks, everyone.
Before this episode of Pass the Mic concludes, just have a couple big announcements coming up. First, from the Cleveland Guardians, three players selected to the MLB All-Star Game. Jose Ramirez, Andrés Giménez, and Emmanuel Clase. So congratulations to them. We can't wait to see them in L.A. in 2 weeks for the MLB All-Star Game. And also, come down to the St. Paul Greek Festival down in North Railton, Ohio on Wallings Road. I will be there. Michael will be there. We'll be signing autographs and things if you want one. But enjoy the good Greek food and everything there. And with that, Travis Kelce, take it away.
I learned one thing since I've been here. You gotta fight for your right to fight! You wake up late for school, man, you don't wanna
you got.